Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower clear.
Welcome to ET First Contact Radio. My name is Maarten Horst and I'm your host this every week. And my guest today is Cassandra Duran. And Cassandra Duran is the futurist and developer of the Time Star model of planetary time-space cycles. Cassandra Duran is a UFO experiencer and student of Trans-Himalayan Adepts. She has a uniquely inspired method of forecasting planetary, solar and galactic interactions as a cohesive whole system with synthesis of ancient and modern models of time, space and reality. She has researched crop circles since 1993 to find correlations with planetary and human energetic conditions. She balances an innate sense of pragmatism in contacts with time travelers and extraterrestrial sources. Cassandra and Ida Kannenberg shared mutual experiences with the time travelers from Atlantis in a contemporary UFO context. Cassandra Duran was born and reared in Oklahoma and personally lives in Montana. A Southern Cherokee descendant of Sanswati's Cherokee Cavalier, she is an advocate of Indian education and indigenous peoples and cultures. And her book is Bigfoot and Human Ancestors, UFOs, Planetary Changes and Species by Ksana Duran is offered with a special edition of My Brother is a Hairy Man by Ida Cannenberg. And later in the show, Ksana can explain about the book and where it's available. So, Ksana, I want to welcome you full-heartedly to the show, ET First Contact Radio. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
Yes, and I'm very happy to have you because I always like to have interesting people with different stories about ET contact and UFOs. And I think your story is quite unique. So may I ask you, where did it all start for you, your awakening and your interest in other realities?
Well, my contact started as a child. Mm-hmm. I was about 4 years old, and at the time, I didn't know it was strange. I just knew I was having experiences, and I at one point I figured out it was weird when I told my mother I wanted to go back to that big party. And she said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, you know that big Halloween party where everyone was dressed up in costumes?"
Mm-hmm.
And she was shocked. I mean, her shock was obvious. And it must have been the spring, but I thought it was a Halloween party because they told these people who were talking to me, we stood in a big circle, held hands, and they told me who was really inside all of the bodies, that the body is a costume, and then they told me who the real person was inside the costume. So that started when I was 4.
Wow.
And then when I was 7, I had another contact, and it was... more, they actually took body measurements at that time. And then when I was 15, I had a face-to-face contact. I was picked up. I was in Oklahoma City. It was in August. It was dusk. And I was going to walk to the store and back home real quick before it got dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this light going very slowly over the housetops, and at first I thought it was a helicopter, and then I remember this is 1963, and mm-hmm. then I realized there was no sound, and as I was watching it, it began to come straight down at me, you know, like at a 45-degree angle, and I mm-hmm. realized, oh my God, that thing is coming towards me.
Wow.
So I turned around to run, and I couldn't move. And basically, they picked me up in a beam of light. I was on board. They did an examination. And then I went, after the examination, I was led up to a room. And I talked to a man. He was human. He had bluish-green eyes. He was bald. And I think he was about 5'6". He was not real tall. He didn't look real tall. I was 5'6", and it seemed like we were about the same, you know, height. And mm-hmm. We talked. He was wearing a cowl, you know, like a little cape.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that I had lived many lives before, and I would live many more in the future. And... when they picked me up, I was barefooted. I mean, this is Oklahoma in 1963. I was barefooted. I was wearing a pair of cut-off jeans and an old blouse. And he just looked at me. He just was very calm, very there, and just looked at me. And I began to realize, oh, my God, I'm barefooted. I'm just not dressed for this. If I'd known I was going to meet these people, I would have dressed up. And he started laughing. And he said, "We're going to take you with us." I said, "Oh, no, you cannot take me with you. My parents are going to be really upset if I don't go home." And the next thing I knew, I was standing in the front yard of a house that had a for sale sign. It was two doors from my family's home. I was standing there, and I heard a whooshing, like, and I looked up, and there was a black, circular craft rising up from above the house. And
wow.
I remembered everything when it happened, and then suddenly I was scared, and it was a total instinct. There was no reason to be scared. I simply got scared, and I ran home and hid in the closet, and I had been gone. My parents had been gone, and they came home, and when I ran. I mean, I dashed, and I just jumped. I just ran up the stairs two at a time and did not turn on the lights in the house. I just hid in the closet. And my parents came, and I was breathing really hard because I'd been running so hard. Mm-hmm. And my parents came home, and when I heard them out in the den, I opened the closet door, and we were in a heat wave. It was really hot. And I came out. Remember, the house was totally dark. I opened the closet, come out, and my mother said, "My God, what are you doing in that closet?" I said, "Oh, I just thought I lost something, and I'm looking for it." And she said, "In the dark?" I said, "Don't worry about it." And anyway, she said, "How long have you been in there?" And I said, "I've just been in here a few minutes," which was true, because my breathing had just calmed down.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at the clock, and it was 10 o'clock. Well, I had left at dusk, which was more like 8 o'clock, so I was definitely gone for about 2 hours. And I thought, I can never explain this to anyone. And I don't even want to think about it. School's going to start. As long as they don't come and get me again tonight, everything will be okay. And then school started, and my life went on, and then eventually I forgot about it. Until 1980, when I had another visit. And that's how it started for me.
This amazing story. I'm just seeing those images of the story you were telling me, and it's really like you're in the movie when you are explaining this. I really saw the whole movie of your story. It's amazing.
Are you psychic?
A bit, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, in 1980, here is where, when I was on the ship in 63, there was a screen on the wall. It was a little circular room. It had three doors in it, and there were benches coming off the wall. And there was a screen on the wall, and the man showed me. He brought up an image, and he showed me that we were above the earth, above the clouds.
Wow.
And I thought, well, that's really interesting. And I looked down beneath the screen, and there were all these, you know, strange symbols. But I was a 15-year-old kid. I was still running barefooted, riding bicycles. I had just about decided to put my dolls away. I mean, I still kept my dolls. And then...
I also did until I was 15.
Pardon me?
I also kept my dolls until I was 15, so...
Yeah, I mean, it was really hard. It's like putting away your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really... I wasn't sure I was ready to do that yet. But eventually I did. I discovered boys, and it's like getting, you know, putting away the dolls got easier. And in 1980, I was living in Northern California in the Redwoods, in a little geodesic dome, and a UFO followed. I was with my boyfriend, and I had a child by then. My son was six. And we were driving home one night. It was dark. It was probably 7, but it was in the winter, so it was already dark. And my boyfriend said, there's a UFO following us. I said, come on, don't be silly. He said, I'm telling you, that is a UFO, and it's been following us for miles. And he pointed out the window. And when he pointed out the window, it looked like a huge moon. It was sort of yellowish. And then it blinked off. And I said, that's just the moon. And he said, if that's the moon, why did it blink off? I said, well, it went behind clouds. Well, anyway, at that time in my life, I was very involved in my life. I was very focused. I had a child. I was working. And we drove home, which was way out in the woods, in the Redwoods. And when we got home, the yellow light, it had turned back on and it was still following us. It went straight up in the sky. And my boyfriend said, oh boy, I'm going to go see if I can talk to him. I said, no, don't. Why are you going to go talk to a UFO? I mean, why do you want to talk to a UFO? Well, anyway, I was not that interested in talking to UFOs. And so what he did is he put a stick, he was an engineer, and he aligned a stick in our front yard with the object in the sky. And the object in the sky did not move for 3 days. It stayed right where it was for 3 days. It was there for 3 days. And he told me that is a UFO because he's been measuring it. He said he aligned a stick, and if it were just a star, it would have moved. He said it has not moved for 3 days. So at that point, I was picked up again, and I just had an extraordinary communication became totally psychic. I became totally psychic, by the way, in that period. And they told me, the man who picked me up, he didn't examine me. You know, he didn't do like a whole examination, but I was laying on a table, and I was in sort of a semi-conscious state. And he walked around the table, and he was looking, and he was human, by the way. He was a Nord, blue eyes, sort of strawberry blonde hair.
Pleiadian, and, perhaps?
Pardon me?
Was he a Pleiadian?
I have been told that he was, that he had a Pleiadian body.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that he said, every man, now remember this is 1980, and it meant nothing to me at that time, but he said, every man, woman, and child on your planet must join hands in the next 7 years. And I thought, well, he didn't literally mean join hands. He meant we have to work together. So I thought, well, I can do that, you know. And I at that point, like I said, I was living way out in the woods, beautiful, beautiful redwoods. I went back to L.A. where I had more contact with people. I got more active. And in 1987, which was 7 years later, they contacted me again.
That was the time of the harmonic convergence.
And it was the time of the harmonic convergence. That's absolutely true. And so it turned out that was a very active period. 1987 was extremely active for me in a lot of ways. My life changed. My life took a whole new direction. I got very involved with Native American ritual and culture. I had always been involved with the culture to some extent, because I'm from Oklahoma and I and my family are descendants of the Sandwati Regiment.
Wow, beautiful.
So,
I've also always been interested in Native American culture. If I may tell you, Krishana.
Sure.
When I was a child of 7 years old, my uncle came with a pile of National Geographics, and there was a map inside of the the land of the Americas, how it was before the white people came. And I saw a picture of Machu Picchu, and I feel very strongly connected to both North and South America. And I also know that the indigenous people of the Americas are very much connected to the Star People.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. Because in 1987, they told me to go meet Wallace Black Elk. It was actually in 88 when they told me that. In 87, on Christmas Day, I started having contacts again. They started talking to me. And then in 88, I was directed to go to Wallace Black Elk, who is a Lakota medicine man. So I found out where Black Elk was, and I went out to meet him. When I showed up, it was at a campground called Gold Creek out in Tahunga Canyon. When I showed up to meet him, he was sitting in a circle with people, and he was holding his chinupa, who's a sacred pipe, and he was laughing. Because when you use a sacred pipe and you fill it with herbs, you use a little stick and you tamp down, you know, it's called a tamper, because you pack the herbs. And he was holding up the little stick and laughing, and he said, "People ask me what this is," you know, it's holding up the tamper stick. And he says, "I tell them this is my antenna for the UFOs." Right? That was the first thing I heard Black Elk say. Well, as it turned out, Black Elk had a UFO contact when he was a little boy living on on his reservation in South Dakota. And it was an extraordinary story of how it happened, but they gave him a stone. He was in a sweat lodge, and he wasn't a little boy. I think he was like 13, and he was in a sweat lodge. And a sweat lodge is totally dark. There's like no light.
I've been in a couple of them.
Right. So he's sitting in the sweat lodge, and this stone comes right through the closed door and lands between his 2 feet. And he finished. Once you start a sweat lodge, you finish it. You don't go running out to see what's going on. So they finished up the sweat lodge, and when they came out, everyone outside was sort of in a state of hysteria. They were all screaming and talking because a UFO had hovered right over the sweat lodge. So, and that is when that stone went through the closed door and landed between his feet. He carried that stone for the rest of his life. And he would show it to anyone. All you had to do is ask him to see his stone that he got from the UFO people. And a lot of his apprentices, because in 87 and 88, UFOs were still like la-la land. You know, they were not acknowledged. It was still really kind of kinky to talk about UFOs. So his white apprentices, he had a lot of apprentices, and many of them were white, and they tried to protect him. And he'd talk about the UFOs all the time. But then his apprentices would say, "Well, when he talks about UFOs, he doesn't really mean UFOs. He's talking about, like, the spirit of the stars." And I asked him, I directly, I said, "Hey, when you talk about the UFOs, Are you talking about craft, or are you talking about the spirits of the stars? He looked at me like, what? He says, when I say UFO, I mean UFO. When I say spirit of the stars, I mean spirit of the stars. So I began working with him in 88, had extraordinary experiences with him, really began to really understand how the ritual works. Because there's the only way to really learn ritual is to do it. You can't just talk about it, because there are certain things that happen in the ritual. You know, there's communication on levels that are completely nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
So then I became very involved in the in Native American ritual, and I was gifted with a pipe, became a pipe carrier. And then in 1992, and there's a reason I'm going into all this, in 1992, I had a whole new set of contacts start. And basically, the way this one started is that I belonged to a UFO group at that time, and I had several friends who were UFO experiencers. And a group of ETs started contacting me, and they talked to my friends. I know this sounds so bizarre, but they really did. One time I had a guy who was a UFO experiencer call me. Well, what had happened is I had done a slideshow of the monuments on Mars, and I had borrowed a projector to do it. And after I returned the projector, I thought, you know, I really need to get my own projector. And this guy who I got to know pretty well called me. He said, do you need a projector? I said, well, yeah, I do. How did you know? He says, there was this ET here, and he said, you needed a projector, and I have an extra one, and why don't I give it to you? So it was extremely intense. I cannot tell you how intense. For about 2 years, it was just an incredibly intense UFO contact experience. And like I said, they were talking to my friends. And at one point, they told me, the one I talked to the most, I called him Syrian George, because he had an enormous sense of humor. He was human. And one time I said, okay, well, what can I call you? I mean, do you have a name? He said, well, in Texas they call me Sam, and in Washington they call me George. Since you live in Washington, just call me George. You know, George Washington, right? So I said, okay. And I called him Syrian George. And he told me at one point, he said, right now, we're working with Jose Arguelles. Now, at that, Jose Arguelles was like a folk hero for me.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And I said, come on, you guys are putting me on. He said, no, we're not putting you on. And I'm going to have Jose send you a letter. And I thought, okay, I'll believe it when I see it. Because I'd had no direct contact with Jose. He didn't even know my name. I will never know how he got my name. He sent me a letter 2 weeks later.
Wow.
Yeah. And like I said, I have no idea how he got my name, but he got it. And I worked with the Dream Spell. So that was 92 that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Syrian George told me that the Native American calendar was their calendar. He told me that we are his descendants, that his people are our ancestors. We are their descendants. And that they periodically give us new information. He said, you know, that they give us information, and then we use it. And in using it, we change it, we adapt it, we make it ours. And then when it and that the information they give us is for the way we live now. In other words, as the way we live changes, then the information they give us changes. And that we needed, it was time to give us more information for the way we really live now. And then they told me, I started working with the Dream Spell, and I told them that the grid that Jose was using didn't make any sense to me, because I couldn't find any correlations between actual events and those grid, that grid that came with the Dream Spell. And they said, well, try 5 interpenetrated tetrahedra.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. I had a friend who was a mathematician, and he actually made a 3D model of 5 interpenetrated tetrahedra. I started working with it, and that is what the Time Star is.
I understand, yes.
I
have to tell you, in 92, I had a vision of the shape of the universe, and there were 5 pointed stars of 5 tetrahedrons in a sphere around us.
Well, that's what the Time Star is.
Wow.
Have you looked on my Time Star Earth webpage?
Not yet, because we only had contact for such a short notice. But this is so interesting, because I have seen this, what you're talking about.
Well, that is...
In a vision, when I was 15.
Well, if you go to Time Star Earth...
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, it's timestarearth.com. And on the first link on the left is Time Star. And I explain what the... I have some graphics. I explain what it is. Because the Time Star, what they told me when they told me to use... They said, try 5 interpenetrated tetrahedra, because those embrace and unify all the prime geometries, which they do. And I had no background in math, zero, absolutely none. But after I started, they told me that I began working with the Time Star, and I found out that Plato, because they said it unifies, it embraces and unifies all prime geometries, which of course are Plato's solids. And Plato said that there was one geometry that was so powerful that he couldn't tell us, he didn't want to tell us what it was. But and then he also said, if you were looking at the Earth, it would look like it would be a 12-sided object, right? Well, that's a dodecahedron, and so the Time Star includes it unifies a dodecahedron, a 12-sided dodecahedron, with a 20-sided icosahedron. It's all here. I have all my graphics here.
Yes, yes.
And
can you repeat the name of your website, please?
Time Star Earth. TimeStar and then earth.com. So it's timestarearth.com.
Okay.
Well, and because you're interpenetrating the tetrahedra, you get 20 points. So it's like a stellated icosahedron.
Yes, and exactly.
Those 20 points align with the 20 glyphs in the calendar.
This is so interesting.
Yes.
Wow.
And the other thing they told me they said that this was the geometry. They said, this is the geometry for the calendar. We've never given it to you people before. In other words, when they gave us the calendar, which is Native American calendar, with, you know, 20 glyphs and 13-day weeks, they just gave us the glyphs and told us how to use it, but they didn't give us the geometry with it. And so now the next step is to use it with the geometry, and that's what the time star is. So, and that was in 92. And then I began working with it, and I still do it. I do predictions. I use it for predictions. And that's how it all started for me.
Wow. This is an amazing story, because you have come to encounter information of such high level of truth. This is amazing. And, Chrisanna, I would like to talk with you about the current events on Earth, if you allow me. I'm very much looking forward to meeting those beings from the stars. And you, of course, you know about crop circles. There have been always predictions in crop circles also. I visit the crop circles every year in England. And this year, the season was kind of strange with the crop circles. But what I want to ask you, how soon can we expect disclosure or landings, mass landings?
Well, okay, their time frame is, they perceive time totally differently than we do.
Yes, okay? I know.
And when we're going to be having, like, mass landings, well, by the time we have mass landings, the contact will have already started. Like, they're not going to start, like, just everyone is going to start landing ships someplace, right?
No.
And it largely depends on us, and I'll tell you why. 1985, I had still another contact. Very common that there were 9 people present, and 8 of us all saw the same UFO, and that UFO came down right over our heads. It was a black triangle. But there was one guy who didn't see it, and it was over his head. And so you very often have a situation where some people will see a UFO and some people won't. So our perception is fundamental to being able to have contact with them on a mass level, because on a mass level we're talking about 7 billion people.
Yeah.
Right? And and what is happening right now on my webpage, I have another webpage, and it is called All Star Roundup. And on there I have an article linked on the front page. It's called Cosmic Sixth Sun, because the Maya talked about 4 worlds, or, you know, suns and worlds are synonymous. They mean the same thing. And because that in that model of reality and time and astronomy, the sun is the governor of life. So when the sun goes through a major cycle of change, conditions on Earth change. So our world changes with the sun. And so the Maya counted 4 worlds. Carlos Barrios, who is a Mayan timekeeper in Guatemala, says that we have left the 4th world, but we're not yet in the 5th world. And the 5th world will be characterized by ether. Well, in Teotihuacan, which is in central Mexico, which is what I have always worked with, because in the beginning, in 1992, when they started talking to me about the calendar, they told me Teotihuacan was their pyramid center, and that all the information I needed was at Teotihuacan. Well, back then, there was no one really knew in the mainstream. Even I'm talking mainstream scholars. That Teotihuacan was the mother culture of ancient Mexico. It was the oldest pyramid center, and the calendar was recorded at Teotihuacan before the Maya used it. So Teotihuacan is the mother. It's sort of the mothership of the Native American calendar, but we did not know that in 92. That has come to the forefront in the late 90s and in after 2000, after several papers were published about it, proving that Teotihuacan was so powerful throughout ancient Mexico that one Mayan king cited his right to rule because of his connection with Teotihuacan. Teotihuacan had an embassy in Guatemala. It traded throughout Mexico and Central America. So in Teotihuacan, they talk about six suns instead of four. Well, according to the Teotihuacano tradition, we were in the fifth sun and we're now entering the sixth. But the Mayas say, and who were down in the south in the Yucatan and Central America, say that we were in the fourth sun and we're entering the fifth. So I could not find why they believed what the difference was between the fourth and the fifth. And I finally figured it out. Actually, I just figured it out this summer. And what it is, it's all in an article that's linked on the front page, and it's called Cosmic Sixth Sun. It's on the All-Star Roundup page. Like, if you go to TimestarEarth.com, there's mm-hmm. a link for All-Star Predictions, and that'll take you to that page. And basically what is happening, and what they told me in the 90s, is that the way they started talking about it was they said that we talk about 3 days of darkness. You know, people talk about going into 3 days of darkness, and there are actually times where there are historical records where it was dark for 3 days or for, an X period of time. And they said, it's not really dark during those days. That what happens is that periodically, they called it the Great Light. The Great Light comes, and it washes over the planet. And it is such an intense energy that people... a lot of people will just sleep through it or go into an unconscious state. And during that time when we're being hit with very, very heavy, high-frequency energy, it actually activates our DNA, and it activates brain functions that aren't really active right now. And when they wake up, when they come back after this cleansing, they think it's been dark, or they refer to it metaphorically as dark. It wasn't actually dark, but the light was so intense that they recall that period as being dark, because I don't know if you've ever had the experience of just being hit by something. And I don't like the word hit. That's the wrong word. Being affected by something that is so intense, it's just you can hardly register what it is. And then you come out of it, and it's like, oh, my God, the world looks different. Well, that periodically happens, and they said that is going to happen to us. And and what it is that, and it's happening right now, by the way. It is literally happening. At that point, I began to to realize, or I began to understand, they're talking about cosmic radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And these high frequency cosmic rays and cosmic radiation activates DNA and brain function that literally alters our perception. And people who get overwhelmed by it think it's been dark. It hasn't really been dark. They've just been in sort of an overload. So they think it was dark, but it wasn't. And so in 1998, I started predicting that, and I started writing about it. And right now, we are in very high levels of cosmic rays. And the reason is because of the area of the galaxy we're entering. And the Hindu wrote about this. And the Hindu yugas are based entirely on our proximity or our closeness to a very high, Sri Yukteswar, who was Yogananda's teacher, called it a great center. He said, our planet orbits around a great center. And when we're close to that center, we are exposed to what he called we're very close to what he called universal magnetism. And mental virtue increases the closer we get to that center. And as we go away from it, in our orbit away from that center, we go into a dark period. And, you know, any orbit, you know, half the orbit is approaching the center, and the other half is as you move away from it. So, I began to correlate the yugas as Sri Yukteswar posits them, and that is what it is in that article that's linked. It's called Cosmic Sixth Sun, and the way the native people of the Teotihuacan tradition explain it, that the sixth world will be one of cosmic consciousness, that in order to survive now, we must develop cosmic consciousness. Well, according to Sri Yukteswar's calculations, we are approaching that center. We're getting closer and closer to it. And as we get closer, we're getting higher levels of cosmic radiations. That's changing our DNA. It's actually literally changing our brain function. So it changes our perception. And according to my contacts, there will be total open communications. They will establish contact with us in approximately 70 years, I'm sorry, because at that time they believe that most of the people who are incarnate on the earth we'll be able to see and hear them. Right now, our perceptual levels have been asleep because we've been in that declining cycle, but now we've started moving back towards this great center. We're getting exposed to greater cosmic radiations, and our senses, our actual perceptions, are awakening. And two other data points really contribute to that understanding. One of them, amazingly, I found both of these pieces of data by accident. I wasn't actually specifically looking for it, but I ran into it. One of them is that Edgar Cayce very rarely talked about stars. He talked about astrology, but he didn't really talk about the stars a lot. And he only mentioned several stars. One was Arcturus, the North Star, Polaris, and the Pleiades. But twice, Casey said that our solar system orbits around Arcturus, and that Arcturus is our stargate for our universe. And then I found in the Babylonian star catalog that the Babylonians called Arcturus the yoke. Well, yuga means yoke. Yoke means, you know, they're linked together, like you yoke a team of oxen or horses, mm-hmm. so that they'll pull together. And so the Babylonian star catalog refers to Arcturus as our yoke, or as the yoke, not ours, but the yoke. The Hindu yugas are based, yuga means yoke. So we are yoked to a great center that we orbit around. As we approach it, we get higher levels of cosmic radiation and universal magnetism, and our perceptions, our mental virtue increases. So that is the state we're in. We're in that stage right now. We're moving back towards, we're getting closer and closer to to our great center. And that is why we're awakening so fast, because the actual environment in which our perceptions are occurring is reaching a higher frequency. And in 70 years, the majority of people incarnate on the planet at that time will be able to actually hear and see the Arcturians. The Arcturians are our parent race, by the way. How's that for a long story?
Well, this is very fascinating, of course. I was hoping that it would be anytime sooner, but what about disclosure, the end of the cover-up of UFOs?
Okay, what this all boils down to is our perception, okay? Because the truth is that if our perception is high enough, if our perception is clear, no one can hide anything from us.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to, there's a story in The Holographic Universe by Michael Talbot, where a hypnotist, a stage hypnotist, put a man in, you know, under hypnosis and gave him the instructions that his daughter was there with him. And he gave him the instructions that his daughter's body was transparent, and he could see through it, and then had the man read a watch face behind his daughter, and he saw right through her. I know this sounds wild, but it's really true. And our perception, our understanding of our perception, and our understanding of reality, the nature of reality and time-space, really determines a lot of what we can perceive. So at the present, 70 years sounds like a long time. It's nothing. It is so fast, because 1942 is when sustained nuclear fission was developed. That's when we had the Battle of L.A., when the big ship hovered over L.A., 1942. So 70 years later, it was 2012. And then in another 70 years, it's going to be, 2082?
Yeah.
And that's seven generations. And when you're talking about a society, because when they want to communicate to our civilization, it has to include everyone. We can't just say, if there was a big contact in China and a mass landing, the U.S. and Russia would be all over them. You know, it would be disastrous to leave out Russia or the U.S. So when open contact happens, it must include everyone. And everyone has to be able to participate in it in order to create unity for the planet. And that's what we're going for, is unity. And there is, even when we did, remember when we did the millennium or the millennial celebration, of different celebrations all around the planet?
Yes, I remember.
It took all day to do that. And still, not everyone participated. So right now, we've been working on this. First contact started in 1942. And it started one at a time, you know, one person, another person, and the next person. And the next step is groups. There'll be contacts with groups. And then groups will link with groups. And that is how it spreads. It's like the 100th monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to come from us. It has, this transition has to come within us. It comes within the way we see the world, the way we understand the world, the way we see and we understand each other. And if you look at our planet, 70 years is such a short time to achieve that. I mean, we should be working on it every day to be ready in 70 years. And people who are not prepared for this are just really, you know, if they can't get through that barrier, it's like the light barrier almost, they're having trouble with it. I mean, a lot. If you look at the condition of the world, are we really ready to meet the galactic civilization? No, we have so much happening in our own civilization. We're in such rapid change that we're not prepared to meet the galactic community yet. We've got to get ourselves ready. We've got to create the unity from within and the perception and the understanding from within to even be able really and truly in some cases to see them. Because, I mean, and when I say see, I mean see and hear them physically.
Yes.
Because the planet has been in a deep sleep for 12,000 years.
I know. Yeah.
And it's just waking up now. So that's where we're headed.
Well, let's hope that we can all work hard and increase our vibration and increase our consciousness to make this happen. And unfortunately, the hour has passed already, Krishna. But if you want, I can offer you an opportunity to do a two-hour interview where we have more time. And this will be on a Sunday, if you want, which will be at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And then we have 2 hours for a more in-depth interview.
Oh, well, that would be good. And you can tell me what it is. You can look at my web pages and let me know where you want to go with them.
Yes.
And that would be great.
Yes. Thank you very much for being here on ET First Contact Radio. I'm going to study your pages and give you a call very soon to make a new interview, okay?
That sounds great. Thank you very much.
Namaste.
Namaste.
And thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.